Hello, folks and listeners of the WFO Life podcast. So glad to be coming to you today for this 26th episode. This is the episode that almost never was. Right as I was doing the editing for this upcoming episode, we lost a disc on our computer that we use to record these on and nearly lost the data. I want to give a shout out to Brandon Black with Computer Pro, awesome local Corpus Christi-based computer service and repair company, for getting us back running. It's late. It's almost 0 hour preparing to launch our podcast, which we've been putting out now every Friday morning at 8 a.m. For the last 26 weeks. So without further ado, I'm going to jump straight into this episode. This is the one I've been promising on sleep, one of the ways to keep enough energy so that you can do the things you want to do in your life, is to make sure that you exercise, eat right, and you have to get sleep. Now, this is the definitive discussion on why you need to sleep and a lot of the research on why that needs to happen. So without further ado, the episode that almost never was, Sleep, Energy, and Human Performance. And now, the bumper music. Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. Hello, folks. I'm Dr. William Curtis. Today, I want to cover a little bit of an in-depth topic I've been promising on sleep. I recently have come to the very firm realization that there are three major things that make up what I would consider health. If you're missing one of those three, it's like a three-legged stool. You're gonna collapse at some point. The stool won't hold you up. And when I say health, I want you to remember in the back of your head that I'm talking about the ability to create energy. Because when we're trying to live our lives wide open, one must have energy. So that's kind of the basis, the premise of why I went down this road and why I'm doing this particular post for the WFO Life podcast. The three things that make up health are nutrition, exercise, and sleep. I don't know which is more important, but obviously because it's a three-legged stool, they're all important. I think nutrition probably ranks the highest because nutrition is the most intimate thing we do. We literally ingest things into our body. In turn, we break the food down and we repair our body with that material. So I think that's probably the most important of the three. Exercise is certainly important. If you don't exercise, human bodies are meant to be active. We're meant to move up to 12 miles a day, is what I've read in some Paleolithic, studies on humans and how we're built. We know a lot of research shows that the more physically active we are, the better our brains work, the less heart disease we have, the less cancer we have, the better our immune system works. There's a whole pile of reasons why exercise is important. But today we're going to focus on sleep. Sleep is another of those three pillars, and it's terribly important. And what I'm going to do today is I'm going to cover not only my own clinical experience about how sleep affects our life, but I'm also going to go through a lot of the research, and I'm going to use as a resource Dr. Matthew Walker, PhD. I'm going to use his book, Why We Sleep, and he also subtitles it Unlocking the Power of Sleep and Dreams. I've got this book all marked up, and I'll read through it at times. I'm not intending for this to be a formal book review of his work, but I'm definitely want to go through and get some of the highlights and make that, to underscore some of my points I'm going to make on the value of sleep. So I've got a lot of notes. I'm going to get through this, and hopefully you'll find this useful. So the first thing I want to do is just throw in a little clinical experience on the idea of sleep. Every single day in clinic, in this very room, I have patients that come to me and they say, I am tired. I have fatigue, ongoing fatigue. I can't get enough rest. I never feel rested. I have low energy, low libido, or sex drive. I can't focus. My memory seems to be faltering, and maybe you know, attention at work and things like that are a problem. I'm gaining weight. Why is my blood sugar out of control? My blood pressure is always high. What's the deal? I just don't feel like I had any zip anymore. Well, as we mentioned, sleep, fitness, and nutrition are the keys. And getting into the book, Dr. Walker's book, he hits right out of the gate a few key things that I think are important. I'm going to hit some of the negatives for not getting enough sleep. And one of the things that shocked me right out of the gate, because I thought that, you know, if you get 6 to 8 hours a night of sleep, you're doing pretty good. He actually points out in his book, and I'll quote, less than 6 to 7 hours of sleep demolishes your immune system. This is based in clinical research. He throws this out straight away in the introduction of his book. He also notes that makes sense because the immune system helps fight cancer, that getting less than 6 to 7 hours of sleep a night for humans doubles the risk of cancer. If you've got a family history of cancer, obviously, you want as many things going right as you can for you. You want to do your screenings and all these kind of things. But if you knew one thing would double the risk of your cancer, that is sleeping less than 6 to 7 hours, I would keep that in mind when it comes to how you're planning your day. Maybe you should go to bed at the same time. Maybe you should make sure you're getting plenty of sleep. This is a huge, huge component of immune health. Lack of sleep has also been associated with the development of Alzheimer's disease. And I've already talked, and I think Dr. Sullivan and I have done videos where we talked about Alzheimer's disease as type 3 diabetes. It was just like diabetes of the brain, and some of the damage that goes on in the brain is related to blood sugar and high insulin levels. But we now know from his reading and from his research that lack of sleep, it seems to be linked to the development of Alzheimer's disease. Essentially, he also states that the shorter you sleep, the shorter you live. That is the way it is. Now, he does go on at some detail, and if you sleep more than 9 hours a day, maybe there's some declining benefits at that point, but definitely below 6 to 7, shorter sleep, shorter life. Other negatives for lack of sleep would include accidents. MVAs with fatalities are happening every hour in this country due to fatigue. So underslept human beings are jumping into guided missiles and driving around, falling asleep and crashing into people and killing them. And that is a huge problem in this country, both in the lost lives and also in, financial terms and everything you can imagine. Let's see, some other notes I had on negative aspects. We talked about deaths due to accidents. We talked about... Oh, this is good. So they did some studies at Harvard University on the health consequences of sleep decline, and they also compared that to alcohol. It's interesting that sleep deprivation, you remember less than 6 hours a night, especially if you get less than 5 hours per night, the effects are very similar to being drunk. So I thought that was fairly interesting. We all know how dangerous drunk driving is. Well, essentially, driving while fatigued or less than 5 hours a night also has similar rates of accidents and also similar health issues related to drinking. I think that's huge. I mean, I think it's a much bigger problem than I think that most people realize. To go to page 134 here and read a little bit. He talks about deaths due to accidents. Thought that was pretty important. He gets in here and he discusses how every hour someone dies in a traffic accident in the U.S. They also are suffering. Individuals with chronically sleep restricted are defined as getting less than 7 hours on a routine basis. Think about how many people are getting less than 7 hours. I think what I was struck by with this research that he's quoting in this book is it seems a lot more it seems a lot more serious than I thought. I remember thinking that, okay, 5 hours, that seems like not enough sleep, and I definitely feel that the next day. But there's lots of people that walk in that think they're doing a good job getting 7 hours, or 6 to 7 hours. They think they're doing a good job getting that amount of sleep. That's not what the research shows. It's not what it shows. It shows we should get much more than that. So I think that's huge. I think that's a big aspect. There's also a few things that he points out that I think are big. One of them is that if you look at diabetic control, if you look at hunger, weight gain, the inability to lose weight, it's very clear that sleep is tied to that. And I have a lot of people that come in to see me that seem like, they're exercising, they're trying to eat a low carbohydrate diet, or maybe they're following my Killing Diabetes program, and they're trying to maximize blood sugar control and lose weight. And yet they still tend to have problems where they just can't seem to make that breakthrough. What's interesting is that sleep has been tied to worse diabetic control. If you think about it, it makes sense to me. If you're not sleeping well and you're awake and they're in the mid hours of the morning, what happens is your cortisol levels rise. That's stressful to be awake during that time. And we know that cortisol rises. When cortisol rises, it tells the liver to dump sugar to prepare for the fight or flight process. The body doesn't understand why it's awake. It's not resting during that window, so it's stressful. Well, when the liver is under stress, it dumps sugar to prepare the muscles and the brain and the rest of your body to sprint, run away, or fight for your life. Well, what's interesting about that is, of course, when sugar rises in a diabetic or anybody else, insulin has to rise to meet it. When insulin rises, it stores fat. So it's kind of one of those kind of indirect reasons why lack of sleep might be like leaving the parking brake on when you're trying to lose weight. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing that sometimes people don't realize that, yes, you got to exercise. Yes, you got to eat right. But if you're not sleeping and you're burning your candle at both ends, that's a huge reason we now know to not only be fatigued, to have higher incidence of accidents and things like that, but also it can affect your weight loss. It can affect your diabetic control. It can affect your blood pressure for all the same reasons. So I thought that was pretty good information to know. There's also studies that he points out in this book, he being Dr. Walker. He points out Harvard studies on the health consequences of sleep decline. One of the key things he talks about in this book is he talks about where they've taken population data. They looked at, for instance, people that lived in what we call siesta cultures. This would be maybe like, South Latin American countries, maybe Greece or the Central and Southern Mediterranean countries and Europe. So in particular, he talked about one study where they took, I think it was 29,000 Greek individuals that had traditionally grown up in a siesta culture. So basically in Greece, a lot of people will take a mid-afternoon nap, if you will, for an hour or two. And then, they have a normal 7 to 8 hours sleep at night. So these are people that tend to get more sleep than the average. And they looked at population data, kind of the reasons for death or health problems that these people have. And what they did is in this study, they were able to identify people that transitioned to more of, let's call it a Western style sleeping pattern where we don't take naps. We typically are getting 7 hours or less a night and you're working long hours. These individuals, they took and looked at their data. Oh, man, 50% increase in heart disease and all-cause mortality in the people who transitioned from a siesta culture where they were getting naps to non-siesta culture where they were sleeping less. 50% increase in heart disease. Let that one sink in a little bit. How important is sleep? Oh, my father had a heart attack, or my mother had heart disease. What do I do to prevent it? I get a lot of these questions in clinic all the time. What do I do to prevent it? We sure as hell better be sleeping. You sure as heck better try to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, because we've got research, Harvard studies, that show 50% increase in heart disease in people who don't sleep at least 7 hours a night. Man, that's a big deal. We also seem to see links with sleep problems in autism, people that have autism. Dr. Walker makes some pretty good arguments for why attention deficit ADD and ADHD are probably, in most situations in the modern world, not because your kid has something wrong with their brain, but because they're sleep deprived. We already mentioned how diabetes and Alzheimer's are associated with sleep deprivation. So, man, I hit a ton of things already on sort of, I guess, the negative consequences. There was a few other things that he mentioned. I don't want to go into it too much. He did talk about how with work and sleep, there's lots of studies in that are related to productivity for employees, creativity, lost man hours, decreased injury rates. There's a lot of research that shows that cultures, or let's call it workplace cultures or business cultures, they emphasize the idea we work long and hard hours, we don't need much sleep, we burn the candle, we stay here off at the office late. These cultures ultimately burn out and burn up their employees. They also get less out of their employees in the form of creativity and productivity on a per hour basis. And obviously they're destroying the health, as he mentioned. You know, sleeping less than 6 hours a night is destroys immune systems. So he threw out quite a few examples in this book, which I really encourage anybody that's interested in sleep to read Dr. Walker's book, Why We Sleep, because he goes through in great detail. If you're an employer, you're a CEO, or you're running a company where you got lots of people below you, you need to consider what their lifestyle is like, and are they able to get the rest they need? Are you using, do you have policies in your business that affect how people get the proper amount of sleep? Because it affects not only their health, which we've already were kind of alluding to, it's going to affect your bottom line. Because if the culture of your business is people sleep less and they burn their candle at both ends, well, we'd know by definition that they're going to have higher rates of diabetes, Alzheimer's, heart attacks, strokes, all of these things that are tied to lack of sleep and poor lifestyle habits. Well, that costs money. You're going to be insuring these people. I wonder what your insurance rates are going to look like. Not to mention the product, whatever it is, whatever widget or you're trying to sell to the world or produce or service you're trying to render, you're going to do so with more injuries, more complications, more errors, and you're going to do all of that with less productivity per hour, per man, because employees are not encouraged to get proper rest, sleep, and of course, exercise and things like that. So I think that I want to leave the area as I go through this. I'm just kind of thinking through what I wanted to cover on this topic. I want to leave the negatives of sleep at this point. I think I've made the case that there's very real metabolic disease, increased accidents. It can affect the workplace, which affects, the financial health of companies. It affects the ability for employees to make it to work and do a good job while they're there. I don't know what else to say about all that. It seems like it's a massive negative to get less than 7 to 9 hours of sleep. So moving on, I want to talk about some of the positives and benefits that Dr. Walker covers in his book and that I've seen. A couple of real big ones right out of the gate. He notes that good sleep is associated with cognitive improvements. That means your thinking skills are better. That means you learn faster. That's why I think ADHD and some of these kind of learning issues and stuff that kids are struggling with in school and people have struggled with at work are probably more likely related to lack of sleep. And it improves memory consolidation. Now, I'm not going to go into it a lot. He does cover in the Why We Sleep, he covers dreams. He covers the how and why we dream. Basically, there's a lot of things that does, but it helps us with memory associations. It helps us form our memories, basically. Helps us form ideas, solve problems. There's very good evidence that sleep helps us dramatically solve problems in our waking lives. So I think there's a very, very real need for people that need to use their brain on a day-to-day basis, which who is not, that to get the benefits of sleep. It's not all just about disease. It's about what it can do with our performance. And on that note of performance, I really want to cover some of this because I'm a coach. I coach a men's semi-pro soccer team. Shout out to the CCFC Sharks. One of the things I wanted to cover was the information that he gave on the 750 studies that he looked at where sleep was investigated with regards to human athletic performance. Many professional sports teams are starting to take notice of this data. And basically, as I'm going to go to the book on this, he backs up his claims that sleep is important for athletic performance based on these 750 studies that investigated the relationship between sleep and human performance, many of which have studied professional and elite athletes specifically. So this is good stuff for me here. Basically, here's what we got. Obtaining anything less than 8 hours of sleep at a night, especially less than 6 hours a night, and the following things happen. The time to physical exhaustion drops by 10 to 30%. In other words, you get tired faster. He also states, and aerobic output is significantly reduced. So if you're a runner, a cyclist, a track and field athlete, a soccer player, your ability to maintain your aerobic capacity is dropping significantly when you lose sleep. Similar impairments are observed in limb extension force and vertical height jumping. Together, these decreases in peak and sustained muscle strength. So if you're in a power sport, it's the same story. Lack of sleep, lack of power. Add this to the marked impairments in cardiovascular, metabolic, respiratory capabilities that hamper an underslept body. These include faster rates of lactic acid buildup, reductions in blood oxygen saturation, converse increases in carbon dioxide. So you're basically burning oxygen less and building up carbon dioxide stores faster. That means you run slower, you get cramping in your muscles faster. This is all due in part to the reduction in the amount of air the lungs can expire. Even the ability of the body to cool itself during physical exertion through sweating, a critical part of peak performance, is impaired by sleep loss. Bet you didn't think about that. I know, I didn't know that. You sweat, you don't sweat as efficiently, you overheat faster when you're sleep deprived. This is the one that gets me. And then there is injury risk. It's the greatest fear of all competitive athletes and their coaches. There's research that shows of competitive young athletes in 2014, chronic lack of sleep across the season predicted a massively higher injury rate. I'm going to just summarize this, but they have a graph that is chance of injury versus average hours of sleep, so that the more hours of sleep go to one and the chance of injury goes up. For people who average 6 hours, but these are elite athletes who average less than 6 hours of sleep, there was a 72% risk of injury during this 2014 season that they studied. 7 hours dropped to 60%. 8 hours drops to 35%. 9 hour average sleep injury rates drop to less than 15%. So between 6 and 9 hours of sleep difference, we have a 72 to 15% injury rate. That is amazing. I always suspected this with my soccer players, and I always ask them about sleep. This underscores what the research shows. You must, if you're a coach, healthcare provider, trainer, you need to be asking your athletes whether they're sleeping. I've seen college programs where they had half dozen ACL injuries in the same season on a 25-man roster. There's a problem there. And when you see this research that sleep deprivation can lead to a 70-fold percent increase in injury rates, I think we ought to be asking about sleep and making that part of our periodization and part of our rest protocol for these athletes so they don't get injured as often. On the flip side, they've done studies in NBA players getting more than 8 hours of sleep versus less than 8 hours of sleep. How about this? If you get more than 8 hours of sleep, there's a 12% increase in the minutes an NBA player plays. There's a 29% increase in the points per minute between people who sleep greater than 8 hours and less than 8 hours. There's a 9% increase in free throw percentage. 37% decrease in turnovers. Oh, I'm sorry. Rewind that. 37% increase in turnovers in people who sleep less than 8 hours, NBA players. 45% increase in the fouls committed for a player that sleeps less than 8 hours. That's amazing. I mean, if as a coach or trainer, anybody involved in sports or an athlete, if you're a young athlete out there, think about that. 7 to 9 hours of sleep, massive increase in injuries, up to 72% for athletes who slept less than 6 hours per night versus 15% for those who sleep 9 hours a night. I don't know. If I was coaching, I would build that in as part of my periodization protocol. Oh gosh, what else do we want to cover here? I thought that was huge. That was definitely something I wanted to cover. Hey, I wanted to let you know that in Dr. Walker's book, Why We Sleep, he also goes through what is sleep. I really don't want to cover all that because it doesn't have as much practical information. But if you're really interested in why the heck do we sleep anyway? Why does every animal on the planet sleep? Why? Seems like counterintuitive, right? Because like if you're asleep, maybe like predators can get you. It seems like it wouldn't evolutionarily fit, but why does it fit? And why do humans require a lot more sleep than some animals? He goes through that in great detail. Read it if you want. I highly recommend his book. But one thing I did want to cover is the idea of sleep pressure because it ties into a couple of very practical things about sleep. Sleep pressure is that, think of it as sleepiness, right? Everybody knows how it feels. Oh, I stayed up late. I got up too early. I feel sleepy. What is that? It's actually a chemical called adenosine that builds up in the brain. And suffice it to say, there are mechanisms that during sleep, which Dr. Walker, describes in great detail, there are mechanisms by which we reclaim or lower the adenosine, that need to sleep. We lower that chemical in our body. He does go through and explain how there's ways that we can fool that system temporarily. We don't remove there, such as caffeine. Everybody knows you drink some caffeine, you can stay awake longer. Does that mean you lowered your adenosine? Does that mean that you don't need as much sleep? Nope, it's not what it means. What happens is caffeine fools the system temporarily so that we will stay awake. We'll function maybe a little less, a little less ability, but we function longer. But all the while, we're still building up this adenosine. We're still building what he calls sleep pressure. When you build up enough sleep pressure, strange things start to happen. And this is where all those accidents we talked about happen. This is where people that say, I can't remember things. Well, I must have Alzheimer's. I need some attention deficit medication. I need some speed to keep me awake. It doesn't reduce adenosine. The sleep pressure exists. The damage is occurring to the brain. One other thing that's along this concept of sleep pressure, and by the way, the only thing that reverses it is sleep. Okay. The other thing that I think I want to talk about is melatonin, because melatonin, I get a lot of people say, hey, I need to sleep, so I better take some melatonin. I want you to basically understand that melatonin is not what makes you sleep. It's not the reason people stay asleep, or that's the reason people get REM sleep and deep sleep, which, by the way, he covers why all those are beneficial and why you should do that. But what he mentions in here is, I think, very important. Melatonin is like the switch that triggers sleep. So it doesn't necessarily keep you asleep. It's the switch that says, yes, now it's time to sleep. That's why when I get to the point where we talk about the things that help you sleep, because I'm going to cover that, that part of it, melatonin is not one of the things that necessarily is going to help you sleep effectively. And the reason is it's really just the switch. And that's the most important thing I want you to know about that. Most practical thing I can tell you about that. Let's see. I think we should move on to a couple other things. There's a lot of insomniacs out there, people that can't sleep. Well, doc, that's all great. You told me all these things, but I can't sleep. So I think what we should do is start moving into the realm of, well, what can you do to sleep? Because insomnia is a big deal. And he goes through in great detail in this book on sleep aids, sleep medications, what they do, what they don't do. He also talks a lot about some of the key factors that we know trigger sleep. So one of those is light. The human body has places in the brain that do what's called a circadian rhythm, which is a day-long cycle where hormones shift and there's things that occur through our body on a system that's tied like a wave to daylight, sunlight. Well, nowadays, you know, everybody's, you know, we're indoors, we're on our computers, we're not seeing daylight for hours on end. We also have artificial lighting. And artificial lighting and even specific types of lighting affect how our body senses whether it should be awake or asleep. So for instance, you know, here I am saying 7 to 9 hours, and then people say, well, the sun goes down, but I'm up and the lights are on, and the body still thinks it's daylight. The circadian rhythm can be thrown off. So modern lighting can be a real problem for people. And as I get into the closing remarks on how to improve sleep, I will definitely make sure to talk about how you can use lighting to your benefit. The other big one, and this is very practical for people who can't sleep, is the concept of alcohol. Alcohol, plain and simple, disrupts sleep-wake cycles. There is a mountain of research that shows this. I don't care who you are. Sleep is disrupted by alcohol. It affects the adenosine level, or, you know, how the body perceives that. And, all that research that we talked about with accidents being sleep deprived plus alcohol, you know, game over. Tons of problems related to the combination of that. But sleep, REM sleep, which is a very important part of sleep, is actually the one that's most affected by alcohol. And so I want to make sure that you understand, if you have any insomnia problems and you drink alcohol, I don't care if it's, I only have one glass, it's only one beer, it's only a couple times a week. If you have sleep problems, it will disrupt your sleep-wake cycle. And in my clinical experience, I've seen people, it disrupts their sleep-wake cycle for days. Same thing goes for caffeine. If you drink caffeine in the morning and you have sleep problems, pretty much better stop drinking caffeine. I don't care if it's one or two cups of coffee in the morning. It probably is affecting your sleep later. One other thing that's important, that's kind of a physical thing I didn't know, that's part of what the research shows, is the body needs to drop temperature a bit to sleep properly. So cooling your room down in the evening is something that I think is very important, and he covers that in great detail. Sleeping pills, let me just say, do not induce proper sleep. And they might hypnotize you for a while. They might have you kind of go into some light form of sleep. But typically, it's going to be unrestful sleep, because all medications, even, you know, the name brand stuff and Benadryl and all the things that people try, they disrupt sleep-wake, and they give us improper balances of sleep. So a lot of times, you might fall asleep what you think is asleep, but you might not get enough, let's say, REM sleep, or not enough deep sleep. And each aspect of deep versus REM sleep and the patterns of which you get those during the day are terribly important for how you function. So if you're having trouble sleeping, try cooling the room down, avoiding alcohol, get rid of caffeine. Sleeping pills really aren't the answer and should be very short term if used at all. I would argue that maybe they shouldn't be used. Sleep hygiene things, he also covers that in great detail. I'm going to touch on a little bit of those. Basically, a sleep hygiene might look like keeping dogs from bouncing around on your bed while you're trying to sleep at night. Maybe drinking less fluid late in the evening so that you don't have to get up and pee four times a night. Maybe, as you said, setting the temperature right, dimming your lights late in the afternoon or late evening so that you have, your brain is not stimulated to be awake. These are things that I consider sleep hygiene, and some of them it can be external. Is your bed comfortable? Is your pillow right? Is the lighting better? You know, dim in your bedroom. All of these factors are what we call sleep hygiene. So sometimes people can just change their sleep hygiene. Like me personally, I have a cat that lives in the house with me. I kick the cat out of my bedroom. The cat does not sleep in my bedroom at night. The reason is she's constantly all night long flittering around, you know, she's stretching or she's crawling up and laying on my chest. And I wake up. I'm like, every time this cat's crawling around on me, I wake up. I don't want my sleep-wake cycle disrupted. I don't want to get my REM sleep disrupted by a cat walking across my head at 2 o'clock in the morning. So keep in mind sleep hygiene.
Maybe your spouse snores like a freight train. Maybe you should wear earplugs. Maybe you should have white noise in the room. There's all kinds of things like that that can be done. We're nearing the end, I promise, on this. I want to get into actual like sleep solutions at this point. And Dr. Walker gets into these, and I think what I'll do is I'll put in the show notes also some links to the things that are most important here. By the way, I wanted to mention one thing on the sleeping pill idea. I want to quote from some studies that Dr. Walker mentions in Why We Sleep, the idea that sleeping meds don't necessarily help. And a University of Pennsylvania gave animals a weight-appropriate dose of Ambien or placebo and then examined the change in brain rewiring after sleep in both groups. Here's what he says. As expected, natural sleep solidified memory connections within the brain in the placebo condition. That had been formed during the initial learning phase. Ambien-induced sleep, however, not only failed to match those benefits, despite the animals sleeping just as long, but caused a 50% weakening of the brain cell connections originally formed during learning. So they taught them a behavior, and one group gets Ambien, the other group gets normal sleep. In doing so, Ambien-laced sleep became a memory eraser rather than an engraver of memory. It's pretty impressive. Risk of death from sleeping pills goes through the roof. Odds risk of death for a person. Sleeping pills used in a year, anything greater than 132 pills used in a year, all causes of death go up by fivefold versus somebody at baseline that doesn't use sleep pills. That's a big deal. All right, so... one of the things I want to cover now is how do we improve sleep? How do we improve this? I'm going to go ahead and just read these directly from his book because I think they're very good. The obvious methods involve reducing caffeine and alcohol, removing screen technologies, blue screens on our iPhones, iPads from the bedroom, get them out of there, TVs, have the bedroom cool. In addition, patients must establish a regular bedtime and wake-up time, even on the weekends. This is what we talked about as part of sleep hygiene we talked about. We need to go to bed only when sleepy and avoid sleeping on a couch early and mid-evenings. So it's not that, siesta culture works, right? Little mid-afternoon nap, pretty good idea. Late afternoon, early evening naps, not so good. Never lie awake in a bed for a significant period of time. Rather, get out of bed and do something quiet and relaxing until the urge to sleep returns. Avoid daytime napping if you're having a difficulty sleeping at night. I use this one a lot with my patients. If I have somebody that's not sleeping, but they've taken a 2.5-3 hour nap during the day, and they're complaining about being awake in the middle of the night, look, you're going to have to quit napping. If it's bothering you that you're awake during the night and you're getting fragmented sleep, then cut out the 3-hour nap, okay? Also reduce anxiety-provoking thoughts and worries about learning to mentally decelerate before bed. So what that goes into some topics I've talked about before, such as media fasting. I think it's very important that people turn off the damn TV, turn off Facebook, turn off Twitter, get away from things that are emotionally charged, imagery, things that are negative. Read something positive. Pick up something, read some Stoic philosophy, read some Marcus Aurelius, pick up your Bible, do something, read some nonviolent, non-anxiety provoking fiction before bed. Preferably don't read it on an iPad, read it in a real book so that the light doesn't affect your eyes and your sleep patterns. I think that's really important. Also, he says, remove visible clock faces from the view in bedroom, preventing clock watching anxiety. I think those are very good. I think the sleep hygiene and the suggestions that we're given are probably the best ways to help people get regular sleep. The only things I'll add to that maybe don't have to do immediately with those items he mentioned. Sugar, sodas, highly processed foods, chemically laden foods will trigger medical issues that can induce insomnia. Inactivity can lead to insomnia. Now, sometimes people can't exercise immediately before trying to go to sleep, but all the same, those exercise is terribly important. Myself personally, I exercise in the morning because exercise does tend to make me more awake. But every day that I exercise in the morning, I actually notice that my sleep is better. And when I say I notice, and I don't have it on right now, so it's kind of a poor prop here. I normally am wearing a Fitbit Iconic watch. I have 3 years worth of data with that watch, and it sleeps. It gives me a sleep score. It shows me my REM sleep, my deep sleep. It's amazing what you can learn from tracking your sleep. So I have no stock in Fitbit, but I can tell you that watches and in this bodywear data collecting devices that can track sleep and really, because I have a lot of people come in here, I'm really fatigued, doctor. Maybe I have low testosterone. I'm just going, how much do you sleep? I don't know, but I got a Fitbit here. I look at their Fitbit data and they average 4 hours of sleep a night. It's not low testosterone that your problem. You're not sleeping enough. It's amazing what data you can get from those. So listen, I think I want to start wrapping up here. I want to give you a few key points. And man, this is for anybody on the face of the planet. It's especially for people that are interested in human performance, like my WFO Life podcast listeners, my athletes. Health requires sleep. Human performance requires sleep. You want to have less injuries. Everybody in the NBA, NFL, people in the European soccer leagues, and even big, you know, CEOs of major companies know that sleep is important for performance, for less injuries, for better productivity. Don't ignore it. Energy equals performance. If you're looking to be and do and accomplish things in your life, you got to have energy. To have energy, you got to have sleep. I wish I could have had him on. Maybe in the future we can have Dr. Walker on the actual podcast. But I really want to, again, prop his book, Why We Sleep, Unlocking the Power of Sleep and Dreams, Dr. Matthew Walker. This book, the reason I hype it up so much is because I learned more about sleep than I ever did in medical school, and I learned more about what I should be doing as a physician based on clinical research. I sure as hell shouldn't be writing sleep medications, benzodiazepines, Xanax, alprazolam, Ambien. These don't do anything long-term for these patients. I should not be doing it. I should be teaching them the 12 different things we talked about in here, of which I'll leave a link to. This is what we should be telling patients as healthcare providers, as healers. We're trying to heal people, not drug them. And it's a great book for those that maybe have had lifelong sleep issues. You want to really learn from the guru why it matters, read that book. I hope that the things that I put in and the posts that I ultimately leave on the WFO Life podcast with this episode, I hope that it helps you. I hope you'll leave some type of comment regarding that. Lieutenant Colonel Story and I have been at this now for 26, 27 episodes. We're having a good time. And we thought that this episode was really important to do because the tie with wide open performance comes from having energy. And so, you know, I do a lot of crossover material for our program, when it comes to health issues. But man, if you're an athlete, a coach, anybody interested in health, if you're a diabetic, you have disease, or you have low energy and you're looking to repair yourself and boost hormones and get yourself back on track, look at how much you're sleeping. Work on it. Maybe we'll do some other topics on the rest of the three-legged stool on fitness and nutrition, but I think I've done as much as I can do with sleep. I've made as best I can an argument for why 7 to 9 hours of sleep is your target. And I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you'll leave some comments. I hope you'll share this with others and sign up for the YouTube page if this information was good. Give me some feedback. Spin me up. Maybe I'll do some more like this. And again, thanks for your time. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.